KPFK Pacifica Radio. This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. It has been 5 years since world leaders gathered in Paris, France, for the COP21 UN climate meeting and reached an agreement that by global standards was considered historic. The Obama administration hailed the Paris Accord and signed the United States on, along with most of the world's nations. A year later, Donald Trump won the presidency, and among his earliest acts in office was to pull the U.S. out of the Paris Accord. Where is the global agreement today? And does President-elect Joe Biden's pledge to rejoin it spell enough progress on the climate? My guest is Thanu Yakupitiyage. She is Associate Director of U.S. Communications for 350.org. Welcome to the program, Thanu.
Thanks for having me.
So it was in December 2015, from November 30th to December 12th of that year, that the UN COP21 meeting took place. COP standing for Conference of the Parties. And the historic UN Framework Convention on Climate Change was adopted by a majority of the world's nations. How significant was that? Because although it was hailed by world leaders as being a huge accomplishment, of course, people on the ground were critical that it didn't go far enough.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. It's not to suggest it wasn't historic, but, you know, 350 at the time also, you know, was critical. And we did say that it's not enough. And even more so now, 5 years down the line, we need greater ambitions. And so this Saturday, there is actually going to be a virtual meeting called the Climate Ambition Summit, which actually President-elect Biden will not be attending because he will start to do things on climate once he's inaugurated. But, you know, it's really important globally for the Paris Climate Agreement to be re-signed and upped, like ambitions to be upped. And the reason why is because we have less than 8 years to turn around the climate crisis. And so the original agreement that was set is no longer ambitious enough to keep warming under 1.5 degrees.
Right. At the time, it wasn't enough. And now here we are 5 years later, when the U.S., which is the nation with the highest per capita carbon footprint, has not just pulled out, but of course, been even more aggressive in promoting, especially under Trump, the fossil fuel industry. So what has the rest of the world done while Trump pulled the U.S. out? Have the world's countries moved along with trying to meet their climate accords? Are there other countries like the U.S. that pulled out?
Brazil has pulled out as well. But, you know, I would say that Europe has pushed forward with ambition. And I think that even though Donald Trump, exit the Paris Climate Agreement and had the intention to do so, that exit actually just happened November 4th of this year. You know, the world has stayed course. That said, I think that the reason why 350.org is a global movement to push for climate justice and climate action is that across the world, we haven't done enough. The U.S. continues to be one of the highest emitters. So is China. So is Brazil. And so there's a lot of work that needs to happen. And the U.S. has a critical role to play in terms of leading the way and being a climate leader that people will follow. And so when President-elect Biden is inaugurated on January 20th, we are going to be holding him to his promises. He's made a lot of promises on climate. Climate was a key cornerstone of his campaign. And so we will be pushing not just to rejoin the Paris Climate Agreement, but to work with world leaders to up ambitions and to create a pathway to phase out fossil fuels.
So there is obviously, because of the pandemic, not an actual physical meeting this year. You mentioned that there will be a digital convening, which of course Trump wouldn't be part of since he's not doing very many presidential things anyway right now. And Biden wouldn't be able to join because he's not officially president. But what's on the table for other nations to strengthen the Paris Accords? And I imagine it's a very different thing. You know, when you have grassroots activists outside the halls of power, holding up signs, chanting, marching, demanding for these accords to be stronger, for conditions to be stronger. It's one thing, but when you have a virtual meeting, I imagine the dynamics are significantly different and probably put grassroots forces at a disadvantage.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this is a challenging time for organizations that really rely on doing on-the-ground actions. That said, we've been able to figure out how to do more COVID-safe actions that are socially distant. And the power of social media and the power of like digital actions are really important in this time. The Climate Ambition Summit on Saturday, national governments are expected to present on bolder climate plans, including COVID-19 recovery plans and new finance commitments. And even though Biden's team will not be joining, we know that Trump's team will not be joining. And so I think that there's a lot of things that the President Biden-elect's team can do in terms of observing this meeting and following up in 2021. And, you know, eyes really are on national governments to go beyond. And, you know, certainly it's hard to protest a virtual meeting. That said, I think that people across the world, including young people, have made very clear what's at stake if we don't do so.
So the situation here in the United States with the pandemic has been really interesting. On the one hand, we saw earlier this year that when the economy came to a standstill, and this happened globally, we saw emissions dramatically drop. For some climate justice activists, that was an indication that we can indeed have we can have an era of low climate emission, of low fossil fuel emissions that can help the climate. It is possible. It isn't. Doesn't mean that the world was, of course, humming along in an ideal manner, because it was also a lot of hardship, particularly for vulnerable communities. But did the pandemic teach us something about the climate?
I think that the pandemic has taught us lots of different things, including that where there is a will, there is a way. The fact that we may almost have a vaccine and it's taken less than a year to produce shows that in times of crisis, if the world is working together, we can actually achieve something. And so what I have learned from the pandemic is that if global governments get their heads together, we can actually solve a crisis. And I think the biggest lesson we've learned from the pandemic is that you cannot leave a crisis to the last minute. There were signs of COVID-19 in 2019, and world governments chose to ignore it. And we've seen what the spread is. And so similarly with the climate crisis, we must learn the lesson that you cannot wait until the last minute. We have less than 8 years to turn this around, and that requires ambitions now. Right. And so I'm hoping that we learn from that. And on your point about emissions being low during the pandemic, the reality is that, like, you know, it's kind of false, because certainly like less people were traveling and that's why emissions are down. But this summer, when the pandemic had stabilized for a few weeks, you saw emissions go up. And so we can't rely on, you know, just people staying home to stop emissions. We actually need to put, you know, funding and financing into the technologies and into renewables. And that is the way that we can lead with a climate forward mentality that will ultimately and structurally reduce emissions.
I see. Here in Los Angeles, where I am based, the photographs of downtown LA smog-free were just too tempting to not celebrate. How are people linking the pandemic itself to the climate crisis? We know that our current the way in which our society is designed, unfortunately, makes pandemics more likely. Here in the United States, Trump has simply tried to call the coronavirus the China virus. But our global leaders, especially as they come together to discuss climate justice and fossil fuel emissions, are they linking the advent of this pandemic to this issue?
Well, we certainly hope so. You know, there is a connection between climate and pandemics, and we do know that there are going to be more and more pandemics. Partially, this is because of like also big agriculture. It's about like the ways in which food is processed. It's about the ways in which people live now, like many of us stacked on top of the other. And so this is really a crisis of sustainability. Mm-hmm. And I think that, again, there's a lot that can be learned from the pandemic in terms of how it is that we deal with the climate crisis. It's all part of the same systemic crisis, right? And so, you know, I would say that, you know, even your example of looking at Los Angeles without smog. Like, I think that people are starting to see what is the world that we want to vision. And it perhaps it's not a world that's super, super fast, where, you know, capitalism is the name of the game, and we really do have an ability to turn that around. And so I'm really hoping that at this Climate Ambitions virtual summit on Saturday, where leaders are also going to be talking about COVID-19, that they really link the lessons of COVID-19 to climate. And that's also why 350.org is pushing for a just recovery. When we say just recovery, we mean a recovery from the compound crisis of climate disasters, of COVID-19, of economic and racial injustice, because all of these things are connected. And so we can't just resolve the pandemic without also looking at the larger forces at play. And that also very much has to do with the climate.
If you were able to give Joe Biden and his climate team advice, how would you suggest they go about using their position as the United States in the Paris Accord, once we resume membership of that accord, to make it better, to make it stronger? I mean, it's, you know, the US is one of the world's worst emitters, but it is also a leader, and it can be a leader. I mean, our grassroots movements here in the US, particularly indigenous-led movements, have been pretty incredible on a global scale.
My advice to the Biden administration is do not compromise and do not be afraid. We are here to hold them accountable and to ask them to go beyond.
Does he have a fracking problem?
You know, we've seen Biden time and time again, you know, not be forceful on fracking. The reality is fracking, this is not a bridge fuel. It is fossil fuels. And there is a way, we truly do believe there is a way to transition communities to renewables. And he had the opportunity in his first year of office to show what a roadmap to a Green New Deal, to an economy that is powered by renewables, looks like. And, you know, we don't have to focus so much. Like, I think that he gets so afraid of the fracking issue. But actually, if the Biden administration can demonstrate that there is a way to transition communities where people will continue to make good family-paying jobs, we can transition off of fracking. And so my advice to his team is to stop being afraid and to stop leading with fear. And in terms of what we'll be doing, you know, and we're already doing this, and day one of the administration, we really expect that he will be passing climate executive actions. Not only do we want to see Biden reverse the over 100 environmental and climate protection rollbacks that the Trump administration has done, but we have clear demands for Biden and Harris's first 100 days in office. We want to see them keep fossil fuels in the ground, meaning honoring indigenous rights and stopping the Keystone XL and Line 3 pipelines and ending fracking. We want to see them hold billionaires and polluters accountable to the climate crisis. We want to see them immediately rejoin the Paris Climate Agreement with greater ambitions. And we want to see them fully back a Green New Deal and create a roadmap to phasing out fossil fuels. This might seem ambitious, but we know that it is possible, and that's what we'll be holding them to.
And of course, the stakes couldn't be higher. Now, the movement for climate justice in the US is multifaceted. One wing of it has been to demand divestment from fossil fuels. And there was recently a pretty big victory, at least on the surface, it seems like a huge victory. The New York State Pension Fund, which is one of the largest investors in the country, announced that it would divest from fossil fuel companies within 5 years. There have been years of activism demanding this from the New York State pension funds, and I'm wondering how important and significant that is.
It's absolutely significant. We are extremely proud of this win. 350.org has been working in New York with organizers in New York and many of our partners for many years in order to succeed on this win. So basically, New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli has announced on Wednesday that New York will divest $226 billion from their pension funds and from the riskiest oil and gas companies by 2025, and they will decarbonize by 2040. And the reason why this is significant, because this is the largest divestment anywhere in the world. And so what this shows to us is that it is possible. It is possible to move cities, states, and nations to divest from fossil fuels. And the next step of that is, where do we reinvest that money? And we need to see that reinvested in renewables.
There's also been a campus-wide movement across campuses in the United States to have their universities divest from fossil fuels. I imagine that with New York State's pension fund making this decision, that it will hopefully give incentive to other investors doing the same thing, taking people's pensions and investing them in fossil fuels, often to the in contradiction of what those pensioners themselves want.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've already seen dozens of universities around the world divest from fossil fuels. We've seen museums divest. We've seen faith institutions divest. And the divestment movement is like over trillions of dollars at this point. And so we already see that financially, it is not smart business to be investing in fossil fuels. And during this pandemic, we've seen that the price of a barrel of oil has been less than zero. The age of fossil fuels is ending. And governments need to be investing in ways to support our sustainability on this planet, to invest in renewables, and ultimately to invest in people.
Tanu, give out a website where people can find out more. I mean, I assume, of course, 350.org is one direct place to go.
Yeah, absolutely. 350.org. You can follow us on all social media. It's at 350.org. On Facebook, facebook.com/350.org. Get involved in our campaigns. We will be announcing a major campaign in 2021 to divest the Federal Reserve, which is the federal bank. And so that's our next pivot after this major win from New York.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Tanu, as always, for joining us. Appreciate your time.
Great. Thank you so much.
My guest has been Tanu Yakupitiyage, Associate Director of U.S. Communications for 350.org. We've been discussing the fifth anniversary of the Paris Accord, the New York State Pension Fund's divestment from fossil fuels, and more. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Do follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.